Guided by Quaker values, Folkways at Gwynedd, a continuing care retirement community for active adults 65 and over since 1967, supports WHYY. Folkways provides residents with proven financial stability, a comprehensive health care program, and a community where friendship, caring, dignity, and respect are a way of life. 1 and 2 bedroom apartments, highlighting their newest design features, are now available. To experience life at Folkways and to arrange for a personal tour, call 267-464-5038. 267-464-5038.
90 degrees on Independence Mall at 6:04. Yeah, it's hot out there, but put down those bottles of water just for a moment. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A Pennsylvania water bottling company is recalling some of its products because of a potential E. coli contamination, though there have been no reported illnesses. Niagara Bottling is pulling spring water products produced at both its Hamburg and Allentown facilities. The recalled bottles are sold under 14 brand names, including Acme, 7-Eleven, ShopRite, and Wegmans. Acme Markets' Danielle DeLila says her company is taking the potential contamination seriously.
Acme did go above and beyond where we pulled more than just the recalled products off of the shelf. So we went for all Acme spring water products, which was more than the recalled amount.
Niagara says E. coli was first found in one of its water sources June 10th, but its supplier didn't notify Niagara of the potential contamination in a timely manner. The company says it's stopped using that water source. There's more information about which specific bottles may be contaminated at our website, newsworks.org. Pope Francis will visit Philadelphia for 2 days in September. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that a group of homeless advocates hopes to raise $1.5 million to make the impact of his visit last longer.
Maria Guzman used to sleep on strangers' front stoops and knock on doors asking for food. The widowed grandmother from Kensington eventually found help at a community center run by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia.
But as I believe in God, I believe in angels. And that, for me, means our community centers. If it wouldn't been for that, I don't know where I would be right now exactly, or my grandson.
Guzman is now a member of the World Meeting of Families Hunger and Homelessness Committee, the group leading the Mercy and Justice Initiative. Money raised for the Francis Fund will support organizations in Philadelphia and Camden that work with homeless and hungry people. A lobbying campaign will also push members of Congress to pass bills to expand affordable housing, access to food, and job opportunities. When Pope Francis speaks to millions on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, he's expected to call for action on poverty, a prevailing theme of his papacy. Sister Mary Scullion, head of the homeless outreach group Project Home, says the Mercy and Justice Initiative is one way to answer that call.
If Pope Francis comes to our country and it's just a wonderful event, it defeats the purpose. We have to have a concrete response. We have to be moved to action. And that's what mercyandjustice.org is all about.
So far, the group has raised $600,000. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Bright lights, cheering fans, thunderous team introductions. No, you won't find any of those things inside an NBA practice facility. For players and league execs, though, these buildings have become just as important as the arena where they play, especially now as teams prepare for this week's draft and the start of free agency. WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Yes, in the immortal words of NBA great Allen Iverson, it's just practice. But these days, practice is big business. Following in the footsteps of the NFL, just about every team in the NBA has its own practice facility. And now, many are building or have plans to build new multi-million dollar state-of-the-art replacements. They're open 24/7, have the best courts money can buy, and top-shelf medical staff, but often much, much more. In Oklahoma City, for example, Thunder players can get their hair cut, cars detailed. There's even a built-in restaurant. By next summer, the Philadelphia 76ers hope to open an $82 million, 120,000-square-foot facility across the Delaware River in Camden, New Jersey, about a 10-minute ride from Center City. No word yet on whether there will be a barber shop, but one thing is for sure. Sixers CEO Scott O'Neal feels pretty good about what the franchise is building.
This will be the biggest and best training facility ever built in the U.S.
But why spend all this money on a practice gym? Ken Shropshire teaches the business of sports at the University of Pennsylvania. He says it comes down to attracting players, and specifically free agents, the ones eligible to sign with new teams because their contract is up. It's an extremely competitive world, and player perks can be an important part of sealing a deal. The arena is important, but players spend a lot more time practicing. So why not do that at the nicest place possible?
Just to make sure you don't shoot yourself in the foot when you're in pursuit of a player, and the player says, where do you practice? I'd like to see the facility. And that's a selling point rather than one, oh, you don't want to see that today.
Shropshire says teams also see these facilities as good investments.
There's always this balance between the economics and winning. Do you want to be financially successful, or do you want to be successful on the court or on the field of play? And sometimes those things align. The idea of investing in a practice facility is not something that you see an immediate bump on, that you don't see any immediate success story come as a result. But over the long haul, it's just one less issue that you have.
It wasn't always this way. 20 years ago, Philly native Aaron McKee was drafted by the Portland Trailblazers before becoming a Sixer. A few teams had their own practice facilities then, but a lot more shared space with local colleges.
Back in 94 when I came out, which was a long time ago, only thing you wanted to see was where you played the games at.
Which was good, because the Trailblazers' practice space at Lewis and Clark College was nothing special. The court had just two baskets and a no-frills locker room, also used by students.
You just had a long bench, and you had like a little cubby hole, which really wasn't yours, because like after practice, all you would do is, you know, take off your practice gear that was sweaty. You really wouldn't keep, you know, your practice gear, or you wouldn't keep your sneakers and stuff. We would take our sneakers with us, or our equipment guy would, you know, have a big bag and keep all the sneakers in there.
In Philadelphia, it was pretty much the same story. The team has practiced at PCOM, the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, on City Line Ave since 1999. That's meant players and med students have regularly seen one another. During her days as a PCOM student, Naz Dostgir says most of the players stuck to themselves. Center Dikembe Mutombo, though, he was different. Dostgir and her friends got to know him and hung out together.
Dikembe Mutombo would say, oh, do you guys want to go out for some Ethiopian food? So it would be me, my friend Mutombo, and his bodyguard.
She says they got along great, even though he's 2 feet taller than her.
I found him to be a really classy, well-educated, well-meaning, good-hearted person. He was just a pleasure to be around. It was a really nice experience. And I guess, I don't know, I think it was a fluke of an experience.
And one that won't happen at the Sixers' new facility coming to Camden. Phil Allen is a host with the local sports radio station 97.5 The Fanatic. He says players are simply too valuable to teams to leave anything to chance. Unlike in some pro leagues, contract dollars are 100% guaranteed in the NBA. And so, more often than not, it's the team that will take the hit if a player gets hurt.
I want to get that fourth or fifth year out of that deal. Let me keep him at the highest possible level that I can.
If that means building an expensive high-tech practice facility, so be it. What's more, the NBA, more than ever, is an international league, which means competition for roster spots and playing time is stiffer than ever.
So, more and more players are looking for an edge.
The NBA draft is set for June 25th. Teams can begin negotiating with free agents about a week later. The Sixers will need to score strong players in both arenas if they want to improve quickly on this year's dismal 18-64 record. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News. For the year 2G, the rap game changed for one nation. Jews aim to slain anything on this plane. Remains are found when the best kept secret get heated. You went platinum with a ghostwriter, so in the game you won, you cheated. My slang bang, you need it. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Philadelphia City Commissioner's Chairman Anthony Clark says he's looking forward to re-election this fall now that he's settled conflict of interest violations with the Ethics Board. Clark will pay $4,000 to settle allegations that he violated conflict of interest rules concerning a short-lived raise for his brother Alex. He's also admitted to not cooperating with the Ethics Board investigation. Clark was accused of threatening retaliation against a colleague who was cooperating. Clark's attorney, Jimmy Moore, says voters should still have full confidence in his client, despite what he described as technical violations of ethics laws.
They are glitches. We make mistakes. We move on. And hopefully the citizenry of Philadelphia will understand that, which I think they will, because Philadelphia is that type of town.
After easily winning the May primary, Clark will be on the ballot this fall for another term overseeing Philadelphia elections. A New Jersey man accused of carving a swastika into the lawn of a family he harassed has pleaded guilty to bias intimidation. Ocean County prosecutors say Lakewood resident Scott Cooney entered his plea today. They will recommend that he receive a 15-month sentence. 90 degrees, mostly sunny on Independence Mall. It's 6:15. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Clear skies this evening, turning partly cloudy overnight, low 73. Tomorrow, hot and humid, high around 96 degrees. There's a 50% chance of late-day showers and storms. Sunny on Wednesday, high around 86. Still ahead.
He never signed his work and rarely titled his work because he felt that his creativity was coming from some divine source outside himself.
And when you hear artist Harry Bertoia's sound sculptures, you may agree. NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY-FM.
Temple University proudly supports WHYY and its commitment to education with 17 schools and colleges and more than 400 programs. Temple University's Hire an Owl campaign is committed to connecting leading companies and organizations with qualified Temple graduates and students seeking meaningful career opportunities. More information is available online at temple.edu/takecharge. Temple University proudly supports WHYY.
The Institute of Contemporary Art supports WHYY and presents Barbara Kasten, Stages, the first major survey of this artist's five-decade engagement with abstraction, light, and architectural form, developed through photography, sculpture, painting, theater, textile, and installation. More than 80 works, including fiber sculptures, vibrant photographs, mirrored set designs, and a new video installation. Barbara Kasten, Stages, on view now through August 16th. Details at icaphila.org.
Delaware Valley University supports WHYY. With DelVal's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology, students develop the skills, knowledge, and clinical experience needed to work in the lives of others. Graduates are prepared to apply for the Pennsylvania Licensed Professional Counselor credential. A specialization in social justice or child and adolescent counseling can help make a difference in the community. More about a Delaware Valley University Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology is online at delval.edu/grad.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, old time is still a-flying, and this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying. The glorious lamp of heaven, the sun, the higher he's a-getting, the sooner will his race be run, the nearer he's to setting.
Franklin Institute Chief Astronomer Derek Pitt's recitation of the first two stanzas of Robert Herrick's poem published in 1628. Derek, a wonderful recitation, and that poem is entitled To the Virgins, to Make Much of Time. But in 2015, it speaks to all of us paying homage to the sun.
It does, because just yesterday was the summer solstice, and today sunset will happen just 2 seconds earlier. By the end of the week, we'll lose a whole minute of time at the end of the day. So here we are. We still have to wait until the latest sunset comes, which is this Sunday coming the 28th. But already, the sun has risen to its highest point, and from this point on, begins to head downward at the noontime hour.
But it's just the beginning of summer. When will we actually start to detect that the amount of daylight is diminishing?
Well, actually, it depends where you're coming from, because here in this part of the world, we think of this as the first day of summer. Back in merry old England, this date was considered to be midsummer because of their higher latitude. So we begin to first notice the difference on the back end of the day at sunset when more of us are awake. In truth, what happens is that we have already started losing time on the front end of the day. Sunrise is coming later and later.
'Tis the season for meteor showers. Where's the best place to check that out?
If you can manage to do it, the moon might be a good place to see a meteor shower. Not that I'm endorsing that we all jump in our spacecraft and travel there, but it's an interesting aspect of something we've recently learned about the moon. Now, it makes perfect sense to think of the moon as a place where we might be able to see a meteor shower really well because of the fact that as the Earth moves through a cloud of debris left over from a comet, the moon is close enough that
The moon can have that same experience too. But something we've learned is that the moon actually has its own cloud of dust that orbits around it. Now, this cloud of dust is not very easy to detect. In fact, you can't see it with the naked eye. The particles are very, very small, and the density is incredibly low. However, the LADEE spacecraft that went into orbit around the moon in September of 2013 had a detector specifically designed to try to detect any kind of dust that might be found in the moon's atmosphere.
For that select group of astronauts who set foot on the moon back in the 1970s, could they observe this cloud?
Well, that's a really great question because, in fact, those astronauts did see a very interesting effect, but not this same effect. They could see a very special effect caused by how sunlight interacts with dust on the surface of the moon. When the electromagnetic particles from the sun pound down on the surface of the moon, it causes a shift in the electrical charge of the particles of dust, and those particles rise up off of the surface of the moon up to a height of about a mile. But as darkness falls on the moon, those particles go back down again. This cloud of dust is really caused by the impact of micrometeoroids onto the surface and some of sunlight crashing down onto the surface, kicking up gas particles left over from the radioactive decay of minerals on the surface of the moon.
What do you mean by an atmosphere when you're referring to the moon?
For all intents and purposes, you could say it doesn't. It actually has something more like what's called an exosphere. Now, this is an atmosphere that it's incredibly, incredibly thin. So the moon's atmosphere is 1 billion-billionth of the Earth's atmosphere. Yet that atmosphere still has dynamics, and we see that as we see these various kinds of activities that happen with the dust.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Fitz, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.
Artist Harry Bertoia was fascinated by metal. His interest took him from jewelry maker to furniture designer to sculptor. This year marks the centennial of his birth, and to commemorate, his daughter Celia Bertoia has written his biography. WHYY's Kimberly Haas tells the story of Harry Bertoia's sound sculptures.
Harry Bertoia's life seemed determined by serendipity. Coming of age in rural Italy in the 1930s, he received the unlikely opportunity to study art in Detroit, where an older brother had immigrated. Equally unlikely was the offer to morph from a jewelry maker into a furniture designer for the iconic team of Charles and Ray Eames. An offer from another manufacturer brought him to Pennsylvania and gave him the means to leave the commercial world to explore his true love.
He loved metal, but sculpture really was his true passion.
That's Celia Bertoia, daughter of the late designer and sculptor. In her new book, The Life and Work of Harry Bertoia, she recounts how another chance episode led to the next and final phase of his life's work.
Well, he had learned how to weld, and he was always making different wire structures. And he happened to be working with pieces of wire, and he accidentally, one broke off, and it hit another couple of rods and made this wonderful pinging sound. And he thought, if two rods sound like that, I wonder what 10 or 20 or 100 rods pinging together would sound like.
That was the genesis of Harry Bertoia's sound sculptures.
He began to make these structures with a flat base and simple vertical rods coming up that were flexible enough to move in the wind or be touched by fingers and make a chiming sound.
From the sound sculptures to architectural installations, his early jewelry and his furniture designs, Harry Bertoia was prolific over his long career. But Celia Bertoia says widespread fame was never on his mind.
He never signed his work and rarely titled his work, because he felt that his creativity was coming from some divine source outside himself.
That can be a problem for curators and collectors. Lisa Hanover is the president of the Michener Art Museum in Doylestown. In 2013, she curated an exhibit called Harry Bertoia, Structure and Sound, where she spoke with WHYY's Peter Crimmins.
People come out of the woodwork around here when you say Bertoia. I've got a Harry Bertoia. I've got a Harry Bertoia. I ruined a Harry Batoya because I didn't know what I had. But I really think in terms of the pantheon of American sculptors, he's right up there with them.
Celia Batoya hopes to end that anonymity with her book. It lovingly chronicles Harry's life, ideas, and artwork with a detailed look at those unique sound sculptures.
It's not only visual, they're elegant, but it's textual. You feel them with your fingers, and it's auditory, you hear the sounds, and if it's on a wooden floor, you actually feel the vibrations coming through the floor.
The life and work of Harry Batoya has been released by Schiffer Publishing. Later this year, Important Records will reissue a series of recordings Harry Batoya made of his sound sculptures. For WHYY, I'm Kimberly Haas.
This month, a great ancient document, Magna Carta, the Great Charter, celebrates an important birthday, 800 years. Ripple effects of this enduring document are still being felt in Philadelphia and across America. Guest commentator, British journalist, and lawyer Sophie Reed traces its history across the Atlantic.
A stone's throw from WHYY lies Independence Hall, that glistening beacon of American liberty. These days it's cordoned off on police patrol, a hangover from 9/11. It's tough to picture that here, nearly 240 years ago, rowdy colonists stirred up revolution. Independence from Britain cost 25,000 American lives. Not surprisingly, liberty is a big deal here, a sort of queenly deity. Americans like to imagine they invented her, but they did have a tiny bit of help. Cue trumpet fanfare, enter Magna Carta. Back in medieval Britain, justice was barbaric, like plunging your hand into a scalding cauldron of water. If it didn't blister and fall off, you were obviously innocent. Villainous King John of Robin Hood legend ruled with an iron fist, driving Britain to the brink of civil war. In 1215, his angry barons rebelled, forcing John to negotiate. The king agreed to sign Magna Carta, curtailing his powers and bestowing fundamental rights on his people. Rule of law, access to justice and trial by jury became the cornerstone of Britain's rather muddled constitution. Its most famous clause remains part of English law today. No free man shall be seized or imprisoned, or stripped of his rights or possessions, except by the lawful judgment of his equals or by the law of the land. But before long, British monarchs forgot this sacred compact and returned to plundering and filling their coffers. Might explain why the American colonists decided to jump ship. In a brick house on Philadelphia's 7th Street, Thomas Jefferson penned the Declaration of Independence, courageous treason against another overreaching king. Magna Carta endures in Jefferson's inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The blueprint for America's founding documents, Magna Carta, lurks in the Bill of Rights too, guaranteeing due process of law and trial by jury. Jefferson loathed kingly tyranny. He'd turn in his Monticello grave to see modern presidents flex their muscles, eroding his treasured separation of powers and civil liberties. Think of the War on Terror, that troubled teenager, nearly 14 years old, liberty displaced by drone strikes and detainees in orange jumpsuits. The promises of Magna Carta seem to be missing in action. But American tourists visiting Independence Hall impress me with their knowledge. These savvy patriots are happy chatting with a total stranger like me about a crusty British charter they've never clapped eyes on. This is a people that knows its rights. On her 800th birthday, perhaps this grand old lady, Magna Carta, is in safe hands after all. I'm Sophie Reed.
Guest commentator Sophie Reed is a British journalist and lawyer living in Philadelphia. For her commentary text and a link to Magna Carta, visit newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. It's no secret New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is laying the groundwork for a likely presidential run, and tomorrow evening we'll find out just how much stumping he's been doing and what he hasn't been up to in his home state. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages working professionals in the region to take the next step in their career by earning a master's degree. The Rutgers Professional MBA and the Professional Master's in Accounting degrees are accelerated programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Mount Laurel. An information session is at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, July 7th at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
The Barbara Brodsky Suites at Lankinall Medical Center support WHYY and offer a new option in private overnight hospital accommodations. Each suite features a private living and dining area and personalized amenities for a tranquil and home-like environment that complements Lankinall's clinical care. With concierge services and gourmet dining options, the Barbara Brodsky Suites are a novel alternative to traditional hospital accommodations. To take a virtual tour, mainlinehealth.org/brodsky.